Okay, so we're holding on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We're beginning the third. We're beginning the new parak, the third parak. This we're going to continue talking about the dinim of Tanius Tzibur, the kind for rain and for other kinds of troubles in our Mishnah, which is actually all the Mishnayos of the parak jammed together. We're going to talk about fasting for different other kinds of tzaddis. So far, we've mostly been focusing on davening for on fasting and davening for rain. This perek also, the Rishonim call it Pirka de Hasidi, the perek of the Hasidim, because we have a lot of stories in it of the Hasidim and Tzaddikim, of how they davened for rain and how they did other things. We're going to have the story of Chonim Agel and a lot of other famous stories are in this perek. The perek story, Mishnah starts, Seder Tanias Elu HaOmer, the order of the fast that we said so far, that they have first the Yechidim fast, before we start having the Tzibur fast, and then we have the Tzibur fast, three very lenient fasts, and then three more stringent fasts, and then seven even more stringent ones after that, etc. So all of that is Birvir Rishona. All of that is only when the time for the first rain passed, and rain hasn't fallen yet. So we said we have the Machlokes in the first parak, what the time of Revir Rishona is. We had the latest one, Rav Yossi, had said that the last one should be expected to fall by Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So we said, by Rosh Chodesh Kislev, if rain hasn't started falling, then Beis Din starts being Gozer Tanias on the Tzibur, and they go in the order that we did. Avot Smochim Shishinu, but when the plants started growing, and they grew unnaturally, so Rashi says that, Rashi says two things. So Rashi first mentions, he uses the Lashon HaPasuk, where instead of wheat, thorns grew, or instead of barley or basha, which is also some kind of weed or something grew. Then Rashi continues, and it seems that Rashi is saying that, and it seems that it's a separate explanation. And Rashi, in fact, Hagos HaBach add the word oi in between, or that it means that there are wheat plants growing, but there aren't wheat kernels in them, or any other kind of thing like that. So anything where the plants are growing, but they're not growing normally. Different other Rishonim talk about different possibilities, for example, that the plants are starting to dry out. They're maybe not completely dry, we're going to talk about that in the Gemara, but let's say they're starting to dry out. Anyway, Masriyan Alein Miyad, for those, we right away go to Masriyin. Unlike we said with the 13 fasts, we only do Masriyin when it comes to the last seven. Here we do Masriyin right away. Now what does Masriyin mean? We had a machlokas amiroyim in the first parak, whether Masriyin means to blow shofar or whether it means to say anenu. We said actually that it may mean both. It may mean to blow shofar as well as to say anenu. So Tosfos adds, and most Rishonim also say that when we say Masriyin, means we start right away fasting. Which means, in other words, that now in case of no rain, we would have also fasted. It means, in other words, we start with the most stringent kinds of fasts. Because this is a bigger problem in a way. The fact that there was no rain yet, okay, rain could still fall later in the season, but the fact that the plants are growing unnaturally, that's a big problem. They're in serious trouble unless something changes right away. On the other hand, the Ravid learns that maybe Masriyin over here means only that they blow shofar and or say anenu like they do in the last fast, not necessarily fasting. Anyway, okay, continues the Mishnah. V'chein shepostu g'shomim ben geshem l'geshem aboyim yoyim. The same way, if there was rain at the beginning, but then it stopped for 40 days straight, there's no rain. During the rainy season, Masriyin Alein, then right away they also do Masriyin, same kind of thing, and on the bottom of it here it says really it should say Miyad as well, but Peshi Makas Batsodas, because that's a plague of drought, meaning as the Gemara is going to say, it's going to lead to a shortage of food. And again, the idea is, if it didn't rain at all, okay, like, you know, the seeds haven't started growing yet, they're still in the ground. Eventually, when it rains, they're going to start growing. But once they've already started growing, if now it stops raining for 40 days, then those ones that already started growing are going to be completely gone, because they're going to completely dry out. Also the Ritva, I think, says that the verdict is that when you have the was first rain and then there's 40 days without it, it's an exceptional thing. It shows that Hashem is extremely angry at them, and therefore they better do something about it right away. continues the Mishnah. Yodel atzmochen avalo yodel eilon. What happens if there fell rain only that's good for the plants, meaning light rains, but there didn't fall any rain that's good for trees, which is a heavier rain, which is needed to penetrate the soil and get to the roots, or the eilon v'lo atzmochen, or vice versa, where it's good for the trees but not good for the plants? Normally you have to have, there should be different kinds of rains at different times, lighter ones, heavier ones, etc. So here you only have one kind, or lazeh v'lazeh, or let's say you had ones that were good for both the plants and the trees, but not for the various, not to fill up the various kinds of water pits. So now there could be a problem. They'll have plenty of grain and plenty of fruit, but they won't have enough water to drink. Burdus, shichen, and ma'aris, Rashi points out, are different kinds of water pits. So, well, he refers to a Gemara in Bava Basra, or Bava Kama, actually, that explains them. A bur is round, a shiach is rectangular, square or rectangular, a ma'ara has a cover over it. Anyway, so you need, for that, you need much heavier rains, so if you have, or much more rains that last for a significant amount of time, enough to fill those up. So if you don't have any of those, also masri and alein miyad, then also they do masri and right away, because those show that there's trouble brewing. And the Mishnah continues, v'chein ir shalo yodu aleh gashomim, the same way if you have one particular city where rain didn't fall on it. And we know that there can be such a thing, and we know that it can be a curse from Hashem. Dichtiv, as you have a positive in Amos, recorded in the first parak actually, v'him tarti al ir achas, Hashem is saying to the Jewish people, I'm trying to warn you in different ways that you need to do tshuva. For example, I made it rain on one city, v'al ir achas loyamter, and then another city nearby, I didn't make it rain. Chelka achas timotir v'gomer, I made one particular plot of land have rain, and a plot next to it does not have rain, and it's going to dry up. Which, by the way, we learned in the first parak that sometimes you can have the chelka achas timoter itself is also part of the klala, namely where you have so much rain that particular one gets flooded, and meanwhile the other one near it is dry, and they have the opposite problem. So here we're not necessarily talking about that. Here we're talking about, let's say, that some areas are getting a normal amount of rain, but some are not getting any rain at all. So Oysa Ha'ir, so the city itself that was affected by that drought, Misano Masras, they fast and Masras, which again, either blowing shofar or also saying Anenu. B'chos Gevisel, Misanis V'loy Masrias. All the cities around it, they also fast, but they're not Masrias. So Rashi explains the reason is because the one where rain didn't fall, what's going to happen? They're going to have to go to the nearby cities to buy food from them. So that's going to result in shortages in the area, and therefore the other cities are going to be affected as well. Different other Rishonim talk about, rather, that the reason is because, okay, right now they're getting rain, but the fact that one city in the area didn't shows that maybe the other ones are kind of hanging on by a thread over here in Hashem's eyes, and if they don't proactively do tshuva, then they're gonna have the same problem. So therefore, they go and fast and proactively daven to Hashem that this shouldn't happen to them. Rabbi Akiva omer masrius v'loy misanes. Rabbi Akiva says the other way around. They're masrius, they blow shofar or say anenu, but they don't have to fast the other cities. Whereas the city itself, everybody agrees misanu or masras. The same way if you have one particular city where you have an epidemic, or you have mapolis, which is you have a lot of houses and buildings are falling down. So Rashi says, Baruach, for example, that there are strong winds, like hurricanes, that are knocking down a lot of houses over there. There are other possibilities. It could be, for example, that there's earthquakes hitting that area. Could be that there's the ground sinking, whatever it is. So when you have a common thing like that, also ir misano masras. So again, that city has to fast and do and masras. The other surrounding cities have to fast, but not masrias. So here it's not necessarily because this is going. So here it's not necessarily because it's going to directly affect them. The people in the one place where their houses are collapsing. Not necessarily is that going to spread to the wider area. So it could be that it's more the idea that, that those places, they have to be concerned that they're going to be the next ones that are going to be hit by this. Rabbi Akiva and Masrius, and Rabbi Akiva says again that they only have to do trua of shofar and or anenu, but not fast. A zehu dever. Now, what is the definition of dever for this purpose? Ir Hamatzia Chamesh Me'esvagli. Suppose you have a city where 500 people come out of it, and we're going to learn later in the Gemara on Das Chafalas that what we mean is we have 500 able-bodied men who go to work there. So in other words, we're not counting towards the 500 women or children or old men so you have a city of 500 able-bodied male workers. The Yotzim men are Gimel Mason, the Gimel Yamim Zachazeh. You have 3 days in a row, there are three Mason coming out of it, which we'll talk about on Da Chafal. Do we mean one each day for 3 days, or do we mean three each day for 3 days? We'll talk about that later. Anyway, Hareza Dever, then that's defined as Dever, because you have, by the way, an interesting machloikas in that. What about we're saying that the 500 have to be able-bodied men. What about the dead? Do they also have to be from among the able-bodied males, or is it also considered dever if you have mainly women and children or old people or whatever dying? So you have different opinions about that, and Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin that it means that the deaths have to be among the able-bodied men as well. For this purpose, we don't count the deaths among the old or the children or whatever, because they tend to be more susceptible to things anyway. What with Corona the last year and a half, we're somewhat familiar with that, unfortunately. By the way, we're going to say in the Gemara that the numbers over here get scaled up to the size of the population. You have a place like New York City, for example, you're not going to say that there were three Mason in it and it's considered Deva. You're going to need a lot more than that. We'll get to that point also on Daf Chafala, says the Gemara. Anyway, so Hareza Dever, so you have to have that, then it's Dever, and then they're fasting and davening. Pochas Mikan, ain't a Dever. If it's less than that, then it's not Dever, and it doesn't warrant making fasts and trua and so forth. As far as the Mapoilas also, by the way, the Rambam defines it, based, I think, on the Yerushalmi, that we're talking about not that there are houses that anywhere were half collapsing anyway, we're talking about perfectly normal healthy buildings, just like we're talking about healthy men over here, and all of a sudden a bunch of them are collapsing unexpectedly. Continues the Mishnah. Al elu masriim b'chol makom. For the following things, we're masriim everywhere. Meaning, Rashi says, even if we're talking about very, very far away. So Rashi says, let's say, for example, one of these things, they find out that it's taking place in Aspamia, which is Spain, they're going to also be masriim about it in Babel, even though Babel is a couple thousand miles away. And the reason is because, as the Mishnah is going to say, the following things that we're going to list are maka mahalachas. They're a plague that travels from one place to another, so they have to daven that it shouldn't come to them. Although other Rishonim learn that maybe it doesn't mean all the way at the other end of the world, like Spain to Babel. Rather, they say it means like in the adjacent countries, or maybe in the same country, or not in the adjacent country, but like in the same country. Anyway, ala shidofin. For Shidofin, which is like you have in this week's parasha, Shidofin's Kodim, about the 7 ears of grain in Pare's dream, where they're beaten and knocked around by the wind, and there's no kernels in them. The kernels of grain got knocked out of them. That's Shidofin. But Allah Yerokin. Now Yerokin means turning greenish or yellowish. Rashi defines that it means a human. Rashi defines choli, which sounds like it means that he's talking about a human sickness of jaundice. On the other hand, the Barta Nura on the Mishnah says that it means also it's a plague that it's also not something that affects humans. It's rather something that affects the grain, where it causes it to turn yellowish or mildew or something. Anyway, vala arba vala chosil, or for different kinds of locust plagues, vala chayra. We had, by the way, in the first parak, we had a machlokas whether you do these things for chogov, but apparently the idea is that chogov is not necessarily quite so destructive, whereas arba and chosel are. Valachayara, and about wild animals that are killing people. Valacherev, and about the sword, meaning soldiers that are passing through and killing and destroying and looting or whatever. So all those kinds of things, masriin aleha, they're masriin for it everywhere. Again, according to Rashi, even in countries very far away, and according to some of the other Rishonim, only within that whole country, but basically maka mahalachas, because the plague that travels from one place to another. These kinds of things can easily travel very quickly from one place to another, so the people in the other place might end up getting affected by it very soon as well. So the Mishnah continues with an example. It happened once that the Skenim left, the members of the Sanhedrin left Yerushalayim to go to their individual cities in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, I guess it was vacation season for the Sanhedrin or something. The gods were Tinus, and they declared a fast. Al Shanir Kimloy Pitano Shidopin for Ashkelon. There had been seen in Ashkelon a small amount of Shidopin, a small amount of this blast of that affects the grain, where there was only enough, it affected only as much grain as would be needed to fill up the mouth of an oven. And we're going to discuss in the Gemara what amount that is exactly. We'll talk about on Daf Gimel what exactly that means. Anyway, so because of that, already they were declaring a fast, because even though that was only a relatively small amount, that could still spread very quickly. So maybe actually Shidofen is not actually a blast, a wind that knocks out the kernels, because that wouldn't necessarily be something contagious. Pashtus, we're talking about something where the Chachamim were concerned that it's very contagious and it can spread quickly among the crops. So it could mean instead some kind of crop disease. Whatever it is. So they made a fast because of that. Which, by the way, there you also have. Now, is Ashkelon a separate country? That Rashi says Ashkelon is the Eretz Plishtim. Some of the Foroshim explain, in other words, that what Rashi is meaning to tell us by that is Lashitasa, that he says that you have to do it wherever you are. So even though Eretz Plishtim is a separate land in effect than Eretz Yisrael, because it's under a different government, nevertheless, they still have to fast in Eretz Yisrael proper. Whereas the Mefarshim, who say that the Ritva, I think, who says that that it applies only in the same country, he would say, listen, Ashkelon is, after all, part of Eretz Yisrael. Practically speaking, at different times it was ruled over by the Plishtim, but nevertheless, La Halacha, it is part of Eretz Yisrael, part of Eretz Yehuda, at least. And therefore, we're saying that they declare a fast in Yerushalayim and in other parts of Eretz Yehuda, at least. Okay. But Oid Gozru Tainis, another example where the Chachamim made a Tainis, Al She'ochu Ze'evim Shnei Tinokas Be'ever HaYavim. Because wolves had eaten two children in Eber HaYavim, where there were Jews living at the time. So again, that's an example of Chaya, that of Chaya Ra, that we said, where we're going to fast and daven for. Rabbi Yossi says that the fast wasn't even loyal sha'ochlu. It didn't even have to be because they ate the children. El al shenu, just the fact that wild animals were seen in the city, where normally they stay away from where people live, that was reason enough to be fasting, because it shows that the wild animals are starting to lose their fear of people, and that itself is a problem. The Mishnah continues, al elu masriin b'Shabbos, for the following things were masriin on Shabbos. Now, we learned previously in the first parak that masriin over here can't mean blowing shofar, because you don't blow shofar on Shabbos. So therefore, Rashi makes a point of saying over here that masriin means davka by saying anenu. So normally we wouldn't say anenu on Shabbos, but here we would. So al irshik before nachrim or nahar, when you have a city that was surrounded by goyim, and the Rambam gives various examples. They could be, we're not necessarily talking about where they plan to wipe out the city. We could be talking about, the Rambam says, let's say they want to impose taxes on it, or they want to be gozer exera to be mevatel some kind of mitzvah, or something like that. So any of those kinds, so that kind of thing is a serious enough thing to warrant saying anenu on Shabbos. Or a river is surrounding it and threatening to flood the city. And because of a boat that's getting tossed around in the waves and is going to sink. Rabbi Yossi says, I agree that we can be masriin, but la'ezra v'loy l'tza'ofa, only when we're doing it in order to help them, not when we're doing it in order to cry out. Which, there's a couple of possibilities what that means. One is that it means that, they're allowed to call the people together to help in order to save the situation. So let's say, for example, we're doing masriin. It could even mean, let's say, blowing shofar. We're doing it in order to gather the people together to tell them, we got a problem over here. Everybody come and run over and help. Then that would be valid, but not l'tza'aka, not where we're doing it just in order to cry out and ask Hashem for help. That wouldn't be a valid reason to be blowing shofar, let's say on Shabbos. And the Gemara previously at the end of the first parak discussed that tza'aka means the possibility that tza'aka means crying out verbally, whereas hasra would be blowing shofar. And the Gemara mentioned over there that there seems to be actually a machloikus tanoim on that, whether just saying anenu can be called hasra. So Rashi over here, when he says anenu, is going according to that one opinion, but the other possibility is maybe it does mean even maybe it does mean even with Schreiferis, but again, it would mean where they're doing it in order to gather the people together to come help, rather than where they're doing it in order to ask Hashem for Rachmanis. Next, Shimon HaTimni, Omer. Shimon HaTimni, Rashi says he came from the city of Timna. There's another possibility. Some people say maybe it means it, maybe it's actually Shimon HaTemani. Maybe it means he came from Teman. Anyway, so he says, Afala Dever, also for Dever, also for an epidemic, we can also be saying Anenu on Shabbos. But I heard you, like Chachamim, but the Chachamim just didn't agree with him on that. Continues the Mishnah. I'll call Tzara Shaloi Tavay al Tzibur for any kind of trouble that shouldn't come on the Tzibur, which is a nice way of saying that might be coming on the Tzibur. Masriin alayin, for anything we can do, we're Masriin for them, maybe not necessarily on Shabbos, but in other words, on weekdays, we should be Masriin. And the whole point is, by the way, we have to remember, the Rambam starts in Hilchos Tanias by explaining the whole point of these Masriin and fasting and all that is that we should recognize that these troubles are not just random events that are occurring. These are Hashem giving us a warning. And therefore, doing tshuva and blowing shofar and saying Anenu and all of this is all meant to implant that idea in our mind that Hashem is running the show over here and we got to do tshuva in order to prevent the thing from getting worse. If not, the Rambam goes on to say, if a person just starts thinking, you know, these things happen, you know, there are hurricanes, there are whatever, you know, there are epidemics or whatever, then it causes things to get worse because then Hashem sees that you're not taking the lesson to heart. Anyway, so I'll call Soda Shaloi Tavra Alatibur Masriin Alayin. So for any one, you can do Masriin. Chutz Meiroi V'Kshamin. With the exception of too much rain. Now, Rashi makes a point. We don't mean, in other words, over here, when we have, like we said before, that one city or one area is getting completely flooded. That is a tzara like any other, and of course you can be Masriin for that. What we mean is, just that there's a lot of rain. They already had plenty of rain. Now it's a bother. It's that people are having to walk in mud or whatever, and it's uncomfortable, but it's not actually destroying the crops or anything. In particular, the Rambam brings, and Shulchan Aruch Paskins that way, that there's a difference in that regard between Eretz Yisrael and other countries. When we say over here that you don't daven for Roiv Kshamim, we mean primarily in Eretz Yisrael. It's a mountainous country, and therefore they always need rain, as opposed to in other countries, yeah, if they have too much rain, then you could be Masriin for it, because those places are not quite as high in elevation, and yeah, rain can be very too much rain can be very damaging there. So the Mishnah says, Maisa Sha'omul al-Choni Ha'ma'agil. It happened once that they said to Choni Ha'ma'agil, and we call him Ma'agil because of the continuation of the story, because he made the circle around him. Although there's also a different explanation that his day job was that he used to plaster roofs. There's a tool that it mentions in some places, we're going to learn about it in Mo'ed Katan, called a Ma'agila, which is a tool that they would use to apply plaster to roofs. So there's an explanation that that was his day job. So they called him Choni Ha'ma'agil for that. Anyway, so it once happened that they told him, knowing that he was a big tzaddik, his spalal sheyodu gshamim, daven that rain should fall. Omer lahem, so he said to them, I know that rain is going to fall once I daven, therefore tzuvach nisu tanure psachim, go and bring inside the ovens that you're going to use for the Korban Pesach. This was actually a couple of weeks before Pesach. Megillas Tainis, which we talked about in the previous perek, mentions this story, and then it declares it as one of the Yom Tovim of Megillas Tainis, and it says it happened in Adar, Yud Tes or Chof Adar, I forget which. So it was a couple of weeks before Pesach. And we're saying that rain hadn't fallen all season, so this is already very late in the season. Anyway, so he's saying, I'm certain that Hashem is going to answer my tefillah, therefore go bring inside the ovens that you prepared for the Korban Pesach, the Shavur Shalom Yimoyku, so they don't get damaged by the rain. Well, he spalled, Vlo Yoduk Shomim, he davened and no rain fell. And one reason is, in fact, maybe because he spoke too self-assuredly like that. What's he saying? Like, I'm sure that rain's going to fall. Ma'asa, so what did he do? Og Ugav Omer V'Secha, he drew a circle around himself and stood inside it. He says, your children have put their faces towards me. They're looking at me with expectation. Because they know, like, I'm a member of your household, and I can, so to speak, barge in any time and ask for what I want. I swear by your great name, I'm not moving from here. That's why he drew the circle, like I'm not moving out of the circle. Until you have rachmanis on your children and send rain. His chiluk shomim and nachvin. So rain started a little bit of drop here, a drop there. Omar, so Choni says, loy kach shalti. That's not the kind of rain I'm asking for. Elagishme boris shichin ma'aris. We need the kind of rain that will fill up the various kinds of water pits. his chiddush lighted bizarre. All of a sudden, rain started falling very hard, very, very destructively. Omar, and he says, Loi kach shalti, that's not the kind of rain I'm asking for. Ela gishmei roten brocha unadava, I'm asking for rain that shows Hashem's favor and brocha and goodwill towards the Jewish people. So his chiddush yodu kisiknan. So now rain started falling normally, but there was a tremendous amount of it. Ad sheyotzu Yisroel Yerushalayim laharabayis mipnei hagashmim. Until the Jewish people who lived in Yerushalayim had to leave the rest of Yerushalayim and go to the Har HaBayis because of the rain, because the Har HaBayis is on higher ground and it has parts of it are roofed over, so they were their houses were about to get flooded, or at least they're concerned that they're about to, so they started going there. Bov Omrulois, so the people came and told Choni to Shem She Spalalta Aleim She Yodu, just like you daven for the rain to fall, Kach Spalal She Yochulahen, the same way please daven that they should stop. Omulahem, and he answers them, we shouldn't really do that. Go see whether Eben Atoyin has gotten washed away, or some of the Foshim say means covered with water. Eben Atoyin was a large stone that they had in Yerushalayim. That was the central lost and found of Yerushalayim. So anybody who lost something would go there, and anybody who found something would go over there and announce it. But it was a big rock. So the point was, he was saying that just like that is never going to get covered with water, let alone washed away, the same way we can't daven for too much rain. We can't daven for the fact that there's too much rain to have it stop. And we'll learn more details of the story and the continuation of the story, we'll learn in the Gemara and Daf of Gimel, Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, later on, Shalach by Shimon ben Shatach, who was the Nasi at that time, sent him a message, Il mole choyni after, if it weren't for the fact that you're choyni, the distinguished tzaddik, I would have made a gzera of nidui on you because you talked in such a chutzpitik way to Hashem. What do you mean you're talking to Hashem? What do you mean you're talking to Hashem? This isn't the kind of rain I ask. But what can I do about you? I realize that you're a very great tzaddik. You misbehave in front of Hashem. There's a few different explanations of what mischate means, but Rashi over here translates it by a French word that means basically to misbehave, to act improperly. So you're misbehaving in front of Hashem. And yet Hashem does what you want. Like a kid misbehaves to his father. And still the father does what the kid wants. So therefore I can't put you in nidui. On you is the kind. You're the kind of person about whom the pasuk talks about. Your father and mother should be happy that they had a child like you. And the one who gave birth to you, or the one who helped raise you, should be joyous. So in other words, he's saying, I understand. I realize that you're a tremendous tzaddik, but in the future, don't talk like that to Hashem. Mishnah continues, and the fact that it says Masnissin over here is a mistake. The printers, I guess, forgot at this point that they're still in the middle of a long Mishnah. Anyway, Hoyer Misanin, if they were fasting, the Yodulahem Shomim, and rain started falling, when can they break off a fast? Kodem HaNetzachama Lo Yashlimu, if rain started falling before Netzachama, then they don't have to finish the fast. La'acha HaNetzachama Yashlimu, but if it started falling after Netzachama, then they do have to continue fasting. And Rabbi Yezer says the cutoff point is not Netzachama, the cutoff point is rather Chatzos. A reason why to say Netzachama, by the way, so one reason could be because, I mean, when you get down to it, the fast doesn't begin Netzachama. When you get down to it, the fast begins by Alois HaShachar. But one point is, the fact is, most people are not, so Rashi just says that the Tainis has not yet been chal on them, but really it's already chal from Alois HaShachar. But still, Meforshim explained, in other words, most people aren't yet up by Netzachama, most people haven't usually eaten their morning meal by then. In particular, the Meiri says day workers usually eat their first morning meal around Netzachama, so therefore as long as rain fell before Netzachama, then they haven't really even gotten their fast underway yet. Anyway, and Rabbi Eliezer is saying Chatzos. And the Mishnah says, Maisa should go through Tainis Balud. It happened once that they had to declare a fast in Lud because of rain. V'yodulahem shomim kodim Chatzos. Rain started falling before Chatzos. Omulahem Rab Taifen. So Rab Taifen said to them, in accordance with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, Su'u v'ichlur su, go out and eat and drink. V'asu yamtiv, and make it a yamtiv.
And sure enough, they did that. And then they came back together that afternoon, and they said, which is Kapitel Kuf Lamed Vav, the Gemara is going to explain the reason why we do that one is because it has an epiposic Nosim Lechem Lechol Basar, and the reason why they did it only after they broke their fast is the Gemara is going to say, because in order to say that, you need Nefesh Zveya V'Keres V'Chava. You need to be full and comfortable in order to be in a frame of mind to be able to say that tremendous praise of Hashem. There is an interesting point, by the way, over here. We learned in the first perek, on the other hand, that when you have a person is fasting and the tzara is over, then so we talk about when they're allowed and not allowed to break their fast. But over here we're saying that it's just it's not just that it has to be over; it has to be over by a certain time of day. And over there we said, on the other hand, that sometimes you may not be able to break the fast; you may have to complete it. So there's a few different possibilities. Rashi mentioned the point over there on Daf Yud. If you break off your fast right away, then it's almost like you're saying, you know what? I was only fasting because like in order to pressure you, Hashem, into doing whatever I need. Now that you did what I want, then fine, I'm done fasting. That's not an appropriate thing to do. There's a few possibilities. The Ravid says that there's a difference between fast for rain, because once the rain has fallen, good, the trouble is over. As opposed to other kinds of troubles, it might come back. Which then there's discussion about that. The Gvura Sari says, in that case, would that necessarily apply if the person passed away? Obviously, the trouble is over. But on the other hand, you still have Rashi's point over there that it's not appropriate to break off the fast because of that. But then it looks like you're saying, you know what, fine, Hashem, you know, you didn't listen to what I want anyway. I'm not doing anything more for you. So there's a different point that the Rosh brings, that there's a difference between a Yochid and a Tzibur. Actually, Rashi holds that as well, and that's in fact how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. That if the Tzibur, here we're talking about the Tzibur was fasting and rain fell then before a certain time, then they can break off their fast. Whereas if a Yochid is fasting, then he has to complete his fast. Only it says over there, if he finds out that before he ever accepted the fast, the Tzara was already gone, fine, then it was a Neder B'Toast, then he doesn't have the fast. Right, so the Gemara says, Seder Taniyas Te'elo Omer Revir Rishona. The Mishnah has said that the order of fast that we had in the first paragraph, the three and the seven, is when the first rains didn't fall. But what do you mean? Revia Rishona, we're not yet fasting. Or many, I have a contradiction. Revia Rishona Shnia Lishol, during the time of the first and second Revia, the expected times when the first rains are falling in Eretz Yisrael is only the time to be asking for rain, not yet fasting. Shlishus Lishonos, only when it comes to the time of the third one, and it hasn't started raining yet, do we start fasting. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Yehuda Hachi Kama. Right, but what the Mishnah means is Seder Tanias Omer Emesai Bizman Sheyotze Revia Rishona Ushniyo Shlishis. It means when we say Revia Rishona over here in the Mishnah, doesn't just mean Revia Rishona. It means Rashi says the whole time when you should have the first few rains, which take place in Cheshvan or the beginning of Kislev, all of that we're calling generically Revia Rishona. So when those pass, the Yodu Shamim and rain didn't fall, then we start the regular sequence of 3, 3, and 7. But if rain did fall during Revia Rishona, and they planted, and the plants are not growing, or they grew and then they started changing, like we said, thorns start growing instead, or empty stalks of grain, or whatever. So then we're saying then we right away go to Masriin, because that's a serious problem. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Davka Nishtanu. Now this that we're talking about is Davka if the plants change, for example, again, that you have thorns growing. Avo Yavshu Loi. But if the grain has dried up on the stalks, then not. Then we don't fast and do Hasra for it. So Rashi says two explanations. One is because it's not going to do any good at this point. It's still a straw. Once they're dry, they're dry. The second explanation of Rashi is the other way around, that they might still recover. They might still recover, therefore, it's not yet such a serious situation. So the Gemara says, Pshita, Nishtanu Tznan. Well, of course there's a difference, because after all, the Mishnah said, Nishtanu. So therefore, obviously, Yavshu is different. The answer is, Loi Tzricha Da'achun. Yeah, but Rav Nachman's Chiddush is, let's say they're developing on the stalk. Da'achun Meloshet Koneh. So in other words, after they dried, they're still starting to grow a little bit. Stalks are still growing a little more. You might think that is something significant, and therefore it shows, in other words, that it's not so bad. No, Kamash Malon, therefore, Rav Nachman is telling us, forget it, that crop is done for the year. According to Rashi's first explanation, the fact that it already dried up on the stalk, there's no hope for it, and therefore there's no sense in davening for it. It'll be a tefillah shrub. Rashi's second explanation is that the other way around, was saying that if they already grew on the stalk, so you would think once they already grew on the stalk, but they're not yet ripe, so we have to do masriyin and ask Hashem to allow them to continue growing. Doesn't matter even though they already started developing stalks and now we're saying they dry, it's still possible for them to regenerate and keep on growing. So therefore, it's not so serious yet that we have to start doing hasural for it. Okay. We said that you can have a case where the rain stops for 40 days during the rainy season. So it rained, then it stopped for at least 40 days, and now we start fasting and Asriyim. And we said that can be a makas batsodas, a plague of drought. So my makas batsodas, what do we mean by that? It means we don't necessarily have a batsodas, a shortage yet, but it's going to lead to a shortage because there's not going to be enough grain because it's not going to grow properly. So the Gemara says in this connection, Amar Rav Nachman, Nahara an Nahara, when you have, there's no grain in one city, but there is in another nearby city and they're able to bring it to them by boat. All above all in those days, they had rivers and they had canals, so the travel between one city and another was mostly by boat. So when you have that one city doesn't have grain, but the other ones that are nearby, that are on the same river, you're able to bring by boat. Batsurta, so that is batsurta. It's not a rob, it's not a hunger, but it is batsurta. It means there's a shortage. They could bring grain by ships. They could bring grain by boats on the rivers, but still it means there's going to be shortages, and that's reason enough to start davening for. But Medinsa, but when you have an entire country that's affected by a drought and they may be able to import from other countries, but there they're going to have to have donkey drivers bring, where each one can bring much less at a time and it's much more of a hassle. Hafna, so that's an actual hunger. So that would be more reason to daven more about it. Rashi brings another explanation that it means also that Nara means if you have one particular river, if you have one particular water spring, which is the source of a particular river, dried up. So now they have to divert another one to there to get water, or to wait until another one overflows its banks and is going to start going over here. So that's about Sardis. But if you have all the rivers in the area, but Medinsa then doesn't necessarily mean the whole country. It means it actually says the city, and they have to bring water from a different city, then that's worse, because it means they're going to have a serious shortage of drinking water, which is a much more urgent situation. Tosfos points out, so we have Makas Batsodas in our Mishnah, where it's not yet, the problem is not yet so serious, but you have, because there's thorns growing instead of the wheat, it's going to come pretty soon to something. Usually a Makas Batsodas, if it's never going to develop into a rov, into a time when people are actually going hungry, just a shortage, then that's not reason to warrant davening and fasting, and trua and whatever for yet. But here we're talking about, in other words, there can be cases, there are going to be shortages, there is going to be inflation, but there's not really going to be, nobody's going to go hungry or thirsty, for example, just because one river dried up or one area dried up, let's say. Because they can always bring from other places, it's just going to cost a lot more. But Amar Reb Chanina, Sa'obeselo Shchicha, here's another example. If you have a saw of wheat is selling for a sella, where usually you would be able to buy four saw for a sella, so the prices have gone up 75%, or shchicha, but you're able to find grain to buy. So again, that's about surta, so it's not yet, doesn't yet warrant tanesim and whatnot. I mean, the yechidim maybe can do something for it, but we're not going to be gozer on the tzibur. Our bav, or shchicha, on the other hand, if the price is normal, it's four saw to the sella, but there's no food available, kafna, then that's a famine, and that's reason enough to be fasting and doing churros. However, Amar Rav Yochanan, lo yishonu ela b'zman sha'amois b'zoil u'peiros b'yoyter. This that Rav Chanina is saying about the first case where there's inflation, is talking about where money is available, most bizarre, money is cheap and available, or paid us for yoker, but the prices have gone up and now produce costs more. Have a most for yoker, pay us for zoil. But if you have the other way around, it's hard to get money. Everybody's out of a job, let's say, and therefore nobody's bringing any money. Or pay us for zoil, even though prices are low, masterian alam yad, right away they do masterian for that. So you have, for example, I mean, let's say, you know, nowadays, typically, you know, you have inflation, but people, Baruch Hashem, are still, for the most part, able to make a living. But let's say, for example, during the Great Depression, for example, so you had prices were cheap. There was actually deflation at that time, but nobody was earning any money, so what good did it do? You couldn't buy anything because you didn't have money to buy the goods as cheap as they were. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan is talking about. De'om Rabbi Yochanan, as in fact Rabbi Yochanan says, Nahuna, I remember Kad Habu Kaimi Dalad Sindasela. I remember when one time four sa were selling for a sela, which is the normal price. But there were a lot of people swollen with hunger in Tveria, which is where Rabbi Yochanan was from, midless Easter, because there was no Easter, there was no money available to buy anything. So like there was plenty of food available in the stores, but nobody had any money to buy it. And then people were swollen from hunger. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, you see from that that's a serious problem. We continue in the Mishnah. Yodel of smachin av loyla ilan. Suppose that enough rain falls that's good for the plants and not for the trees. So we have three possibilities, where it's enough for the plants and not the trees, where it's enough for the trees and not for the plants, and where it's enough for both of them, but not for the birdus shichin umaris. So let's figure that out. Bishlemel of smachin loyla ilan. Where you have it's enough for the plants and not the trees. Mashkachasla, we can understand what we mean. If there's only gentle rains which don't penetrate the soil so deeply, so those are good for the plants because those don't need it to penetrate that much, but there's no heavy rain at any time. So therefore we understand that's what the Mishnah means of the problem. Le'ilan v'loy le'tzmochim, and when you have the other way around, where it's good for the trees and not for the plants, would mean to asya razya v'loy asya nicha, where there's only heavy rains and not light rains. So then it tends to wash away or at least oversaturate the areas where you have grain and whatever growing. So when we say that there's enough for the plants and for the trees, but not for the birdus shichin amaris, fine, we can also understand mashkachasla de oser razia v'nicha. There were heavy rains and there were light rains. Mio tuva layaska, but there wasn't enough for either one. So the plants have now had what to drink, but the birdus shichin amaris are not getting filled up because the rain didn't last long enough. Ella hodatania, but we have to ask. The Braisa mentions a fourth possibility. You can have a case where there's enough for the birdus shichin ma'aretz, but not for the plants and not for the trees. So what's the scenario you would have that? And the answer is the asya b'shvichusa, where it comes as a pour, where it comes as a downpour. So Rashi explains first that's not good for the trees. It's not good for the trees, and it's not good for the plants because it's too much of a downpour. Like, you know how sometimes it rains like as if a bucket was overturned. That's b'shvichusa. Then Rashi brings another explanation from his Rebbe. No, shvichusa does mean that it's a gentle rain, but it's a dak va'ova yosemidai. Rashi says it's a gentle rain, but there's too much of it. So it's not good for the trees because it needs a heavy rain that'll actually penetrate the ground, that the drops will penetrate the ground, and it's not good for the plants because it floods them. So that would be the kind of thing. So you have the speed of the raindrops is a light rain, but the amount of it is too much. That would be b'shvichosa. So then we're saying it'll fill up the birdus shichin ma'aretz, but it's not going to be good for the trees, and it's going to wash away the plants. So all of those things we're saying masrin alei miyat. We learn in a brisa. Masrin ala ilonis b'froisa pesach. We do hasra when there's not enough rain for the trees b'froisa pesach. Usually, froisa pesach means a couple of weeks before Rosh Hashanah. Although Rashi says over here that it means actually even during Pesach. Because even though Pesach is not a normal time for it to rain, nevertheless, the fact is we don't want the trees to dry out. We need fruit from the trees. And when it comes to, if we don't have water in the water, in the various water pits, then we can do masrin for them even shortly before Sukkot, because the fact is they need water in order to water their in order to, for themselves to drink, for their animals to water their, to water whatever fields that where rainwater is not enough for them. So even though Pesach Chag is for sure not a normal time for it to rain yet, it's the tail end of the summer, nevertheless, that's still a valid time to do Asra. And for all of these things, in Einlahem Mayim Lishtos, if they kosher don't have water to drink, Masriin Alein Miyad, then they do Asra for it right away. They say, oh, Miyad Shalahem. What do we mean by Miyad? We mean Sheni V'chamishi V'sheni. We mean the next Monday, Thursday, and Monday. Va'akulon, Ein Masriin Alein, Ela V'ifrachya Shalahem. All of these things that we're talking about, we're only Masriin in that Hifrachya, in that particular country, Malchus, and Rashi and Tosfos define Hifrachi as Malchus, in that particular kingdom, where they don't have water, where the water pits are empty. But in other words, not in other ones, because the pastures, they're not going to be bringing water all the way from other countries there. The Askara. Now, what about if you have a disease called Askara, which is some kind of mouth or throat disease? Some people translate it as diphtheria. Anyway, so when you have that, bisman sheyesh b'misa, when it involves that people are dying from it, masriin aleha, then we masriin for it. Bisman she'ein b'misa, where people are not actually dying from it, people are just uncomfortable, they're sick for a while, ein masriin aleha, we don't yet do masriin shofar or anein for it. It's not that serious. Umasriin ala goivai b'choshehu, we're masriin for any amount of goivai, which is locusts that are going to eat up the crops. But even kosher, even if there's only a tiny bit, even if there's only a tiny bit, because it actually says it means that there's going to be more on the way. Reb Shimon Alazar Omer, Afal Chagav. Reb Shimon Alazar says also for Chagav, but whereas the Tanakhama says no, because Chagav is a common enough species that you see you have Chagav around relatively often, and they don't destroy the crop, so that's not serious enough yet. Tanan Abonon, Masriin Aleilanis B'Shar Shnei Shavua. When it comes to the trees, we do masriin where we don't have enough rain for them to grow properly during the 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, but not during Shemitah year because the trees are hefker anyway. Ala birdas, ala shichin, ala oris, after the b'shvias. But when we don't have enough water for the water pit, that we do masriin even during Shemitah, because even during Shemitah they need drinking water. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm afa ilonis, afa ilonis b'shvias. Reb Shimon Gamliel says no, you do masriin even for the trees, even during Shemitah, the Pnei Sheyesh Ben Parnosal Aniyim, because the Aniyim still get food from them. After all, you have some fruit grows on the trees, and the Aniyim are able to take it. So therefore, the fact that you don't have that is reason enough to make a is reason enough to do Masri. Tanya Idach, and then we learn in another Braisa, Masri al Ilonis B'Shar Shnei Shavua. We do Masri in for the trees during the other six years. Our birdus vala shichin vama oret hakel b'shvias. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer af ala ilanas masriin ala shichin b'shvias. Reb Shimon Gamliel says also for the trees you have the shichin. Now the shichin are the aftergrowth, like what grows on its own the following year. Even though those are not really so important, they're just left over from seeds that fell last year. Nevertheless, if they're not growing, and you know, if you don't have enough rain for them, even during Shemitah, we're still masriin again with Pnei Sheyesh Ben Parnosal Aniyim, because Aniyim still depend on them in order to eat. Now Tosfos points out, what about Sfichim of plants? So Sfichim of plants, actually, you have an Isser Dirabonon to eat them. Because the Chachamim were concerned that you're going to go and plant deliberately, and then when they grow, you're going to say, oh, they're Sfichim, they're left over from seeds that fell last year. That's why Reb Shimon Gamliel is focusing over here on Sfichim of trees. Because those, they don't grow that fast anyhow. There's no possibility that maybe a person planted them during Shemitah and already they're growing now. Okay. Now some Agabda. Tanya, Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Pauta, miyom shechora beis mikdash, ever since the beis mikdash was destroyed, nasu gshamim tzimukin la'olam. The rain has become tzimukin for the world. Tzimukin, Rashi says, means shriveled. Like the rain has shriveled up. On the side of it here, it brings from the Oruch that has a gears of stimion, where the Oruch explains it into something that the world is tested with. Like when the Beis Mikdash was standing, we had other tests to see whether the Jewish people are doing what Hashem wants. You had, for example, the strip of red wool that would turn white on Yom Kippur. You had different other things. You had the Kruvim facing each other, things like that. But now, after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, then we have to depend on the rain to know how we're failing. Yes, Shana Shek Shemel Merubin. So sometimes you have years when you have a lot of rain. But yes, Shana Shek Shemel Morten. And sometimes you have years where you have very little rain. Yes, Shana Shek Shemel Yodin Bizmanon. You have ones where they fall in the proper time. And then you have ones where they're not falling in the proper time. So this is ever since the Churban, we have this kind of problem. So when a year, when the rain falls in the proper time, what is that like? In other words, the question is, we understand if there's no rain, that's a problem. But what's so bad if the rain falls, not when it's supposed to, it falls at a different time of year, let's say. So when it falls in its proper time, what is it like? Like a slave whose master gives him his food on Sunday. So he has plenty of time to prepare it before the end of the week. So he's able to knead the dough properly and eat it properly. But when it doesn't fall in the right time, like it falls very late in the season, it's like as if the master gave him his parnasa on Erev Shabbos. So sure, he has the food, but he doesn't have time to prepare it. So the dough comes out. It wasn't baked properly. He didn't have enough time to bake it properly. And he can't really eat it properly. He has to hurry and make it, and it doesn't come out good quality bread. So the same way, when rain falls out of season, you don't have good quality crops. When you have a year with lots of rain, what is that like? It's like when the master gives the slave his food, his stipend of food, all at once. Now, what happens? You get grain, for example. You have to grind it. We have to consider, whenever you grind grain, some of it is going to get wasted. Some of it is going to stick to the millstones, for example. So what happens is, therefore, that when you grind, the millstones end up absorbing the same amount from a kur as they would have from a calf. Meaning, in other words, there's always going to be some wasted. But when you're grinding a lot at once, then you have the same amount of wastage, but it's relative to a kur. So therefore, it's a much smaller percentage, as opposed to if you were grinding one calf at a time, then you have each time a lot is being wasted on the millstones. The same way when you're kneading the dough, also some of it ends up sticking to the tray, the trough, the bowl, whatever that you're kneading the dough in. So the same thing, all that gets lost from it, from a kur, is what it would have lost from a kav, meaning that you're gaining. So Rashi says, in other words, the nimshal is when you have lots of rain and it fertilizes the ground, inevitably what happens is some of it is going to get wasted on dry land, on rocky land. But if you have a lot of rain, then fine, a certain amount of it is going to get wasted on rocky land, but relative to the total amount of rain, it's going to be a much smaller amount. As opposed to when you have a little rain here, a little rain there, and each time it dries up in between, then you're going to have those rocky areas are going to absorb a lot more of the rain, so much less of it is going to be available for the fertile areas. So therefore he continues. When you have a year where there's very little rain, what is it like? Meaning when you only have a little rain here, a little rain there, and in between it dries up. Like a slave whose master gives him his parnasa a little bit at a time. So every time, for example, every time he has a calf of wheat, he has to go and grind it. But again, so it comes out the amount that's wasted that gets stuck to the millstone from the calf is the same amount it would have from the kur, and relative to a calf, it's a much larger percentage. Let's say, for example, in other words, to put it in terms that we can understand. Let's say, for example, every time you grind grain, you're going to lose, let's say a pound of it is going to get stuck to the millstone. So if you're grinding, let's say, only 5 pounds at a time, you've just lost 20% of it. Whereas if you're grinding 1,000 pounds at a time, then you're only losing 1 pound out of 1,000. That's the point we're saying over here in the Gemara. So So therefore, the same way, in other words, when it rains, only a little here, a little there, you may get the same total amount of rain, but much more if it gets wasted on unproductive areas. And the same thing. When you're making the dough, you're putting the dough in a you're putting the flour and water in a tray and mixing it, and also a certain amount of it inevitably sticks to the tray. So now you have, out of a cab, it's a much larger percentage than if you had a larger amount to begin with, and you would have been able to do it all at once. So in other words, therefore, more of the rain gets wasted. Dover Acher, another way of understanding it, is man shek shmer merubin, when you have a time when there's lots of rain, l'mahu dremer, l'odom shem gavel as a tit, like a person who's kneading clay. He takes clay ground and mixes it with water. Im yesh le mayim rabim, so if he has lots of water, mayim enen kolin, he doesn't end up using up all the water before he's done the job, batit megubo yofa, and the clay gets very well mixed and is very good for building it. But in Yeshle, Mayim Muatim, but if he doesn't have enough water, Mayim Kolim Vatikenim Eskabo Yofa, he uses up the water before he's done the job, and therefore the clay that he makes is not going to be good quality because he doesn't have enough water to mix it properly. So the same way, in other words, when there's plenty of rain, then the ground itself gets well saturated, whereas when there's too little rain, then the ground itself doesn't get saturated with enough rain, and therefore the plants are not growing properly. So the point is, in other words, we have to realize that it's not just the total amount of rain in the season, it's how it comes. Whether it comes in large amounts at any one time, or whether it comes in dribs and drabs at different times, and therefore, like we're saying in these various mishalim over here, that it doesn't give you the full benefit that it otherwise would have. Okay. Everyone?